taking a few moments to tune in and to make any adjustments that are needed, so that the body is as supported and stable as possible. As we settle into the posture, checking in with the balance of uprightness in the body. Feeling the body lengthening and opening as we take our seat. And that lengthening, uprightness, balanced with the receptivity and ease and opening of the body space. And checking in with the body posture and seeing what can support this balance. Body to be upright. Expanded. At the same time, relatively relaxed, not too strained or tense. We can bring the awareness to the sensations of contact between the body and the seat and body in the floor. Letting those sensations support a grounding in the body, and a grounding in the support of the earth. And from that support, energy flowing up the body and through the body, supporting that lengthening and that uprightness, and also supporting an opening. So awareness, grounded, rooted in the contact areas, and then opening out and expanding through the body space. Awareness filling up the space of the whole body. Gently opening to a sense of the whole body sitting here. Whole body present here. Grounded and rooted in the sensations of contact. Opening, spreading, expanding. Whole body space with gentleness. Whole space of the body sensitive. Open and alive. tuning in to an attitude of kindness and of interest as we meet experience this way. As we rest into the experience of body, presence of body, with kindness and interest. Whole space of the body open, awareness spread through the whole body. Within the space of awareness, within the field of the body, the breath being known, the movement and flow of the breathing, arising and filling up the space of awareness with the energy of the breath. Flowing into the body and out of the body. Rhythmically and without a particular effort or even intention. Meeting this movement and flow of the breathing, this rhythm of breathing. Meeting this too with interest, kindness, sensitivity and gentleness. If possible for this practice time, keeping the awareness large in the whole body, if that's possible for you. Meeting the flow of the breath through the body space. Keeping the body, keeping awareness open and wide and sensitive. The breath flowing through the space. And the attitude of the mind as we do this, the heart and mind. Kind, curious, gentle, and sensitive. taking a moment to check in with your experience right now. Just checking in. Where's the heart and mind? If there's been a shift or a movement away from the object of the practice, away from the body in the breath, that's okay. Without judging, noticing, now I'm present. I'm here. Taking a moment to appreciate presence. Reconnecting. Reconnecting with the body. Both the immediacy of the sensations of contact between body, seat and ground. And then that expanded spread awareness through the whole body sitting here. Feeling that wideness. And feeling the flow, the movement, the fluidity of the breathing. Moving through the space of awareness in the body. Energy of the breath spreading through the whole body space. Being known in the space of the body, in the space of awareness. Resting into this presence in the body. Resting into that awareness spread through the whole space of the body. And that dance and rhythm of the breath flowing in and out of the body space. Meeting that present with that. Right now, in this moment, and in this one. All of it held in interest, kindness, and gentleness. So exploring for yourself again. This presence in the body, aware of the body, know the movement of the breath, resting in an attitude of kindness and curiosity. Including moments of presence, a moment of discovery that I have not been present, and celebrating this reconnection, this opportunity, right now. Once more, checking in, meeting what's unfolding in experience right now. Resting more fully, more deeply, to through the grounding in the body. Resting more fully into the awareness spread through the whole body. The flow and the rhythm of the breath. All held and known. And curiosity and kindness. When the bell rings in a moment, no rush, gently staying with awareness in the body, with the steadiness and flow of the breathing, even when you shift position or open the eyes. Taking your time, staying kind and curious. So thank you for your practice. And really take your time. Really no rush. Before I share some reflections on the teachings for today, just like to share some reflections on dana practice. I'm going to try and keep it brief and to the point. So dana means giving. And these sessions, these online Dharma Hall teachings and opportunities are offered in the spirit of dana. They're freely offered, they're given to us. The invitation in Dharma practice for all of us is to also practice this giving. Yeah. So the sessions are offered to us as a support to us, and we can also ourselves, yeah, we're invited, each of us, to participate in this offering. Mm. It's not from one person to one person, it's from all of us to all of us. And so I'm going to put into the chat the links, yeah, to participate, to offer support to Gaia House so that it continue to support us, to offer these sessions, to be here together, and to offer support, in this case to me, for the teachings. And so it's a real invitation, yeah, to see ourselves as we do this. Yeah, this is the practice. See this as an opportunity to share. Yeah, share in the support, participate in the offering of this and through this, you know, in the sharing of Dharma across time and location. So there are the links. So I was reflecting. I was reflecting yesterday on what to share this morning. Yeah. It's always an interesting reflection. Yeah, what to bring, you know, what other questions, what other issues to address. And I kind of was zooming out with that, you know, kind of peeling out and kind of taking a big picture and asking myself, you know, this is something that happens to me a lot with the sessions in the online Dharma Hall, you know, try and feel what are the relevant questions for us in these times? What are the relevant questions for us in these times? And if I was exploring this and going into that question and seeing how some of the issues might feel very particular. You know, I think we've all gotten into the habit of saying, oh, you know, this pandemic or these times or this situation. Yeah. You know, like as a particular, which it also is. Yeah. But also it's incredibly universal. Incredibly universal. You know, and for me, often when I reflect on, you know, what are the questions, you know, when I ask myself this question, what are the relevant questions for us at this time? It comes down to this, you know, how do I live, yeah, or how do we live in ways that promote well-being and happiness? You know, it really comes down to that question. How do I live, or how do we live in ways that promote well-being and happiness, both for ourselves and for others? How do we do that? How do we live in the world without losing touch with our aspirations, without losing touch with wisdom, with compassion? And so that was kind of the question. Then last night, and actually I knew I had the Dharma Hall today, and then I kind of forgot about it, and I was quite satisfied in the afternoon because I thought I'd finished everything I needed to do for that day. And then, you know, so I was out for a walk with Nathan, I suddenly realized, oh no, there's also the Dharma Hall to prepare for. So I came back, and after dinner, kind of I sat back at the computer and did this reflection that I just shared with you. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to go to the texts. Yeah, and I said these questions are universal. Let's see what they said, you know, 2,600 years ago, at the time of the Buddha. Yeah, what did they say? And I went to this sutta. Which is called Dighajanu Sutta. Dighajanu is the person who's asking the Buddha questions. So it's his sutta. So yeah, again, I'll read the question in a moment. But just to stop in it for a moment, say, you know, for me it's really moving. Yeah, like these questions are beyond time. Yeah, how do we live in ways that promote well-being and happiness? Yeah, how do we live in the world without losing touch with wisdom and compassion? You know, they're relevant beyond time. Yeah, and here's someone 2,600 years ago, living in very different circumstances, asking those very questions, and he's asking them not personally. Yeah, so let's read the beginning of the sutta and talk about it. So the sutta begins like many suttas begin, and I'm gonna kind of read most of it. I'll probably chop out bits a little bit in the interest of brevity. So thus have I heard. That's the way many suttas begin. Thus have I heard. Once the exalted one, the Buddha, was dwelling amongst the Kolyans, the group of people. Then Digajanu, a Kolyan, one of those of that group of people, approached the Buddha, respectfully saluted him, and sat to one side. He then addressed the Buddha as follows: "We, Lord, are lay people who enjoy worldly pleasure." Yeah, so look at that, we, okay? He's not saying I, he's saying we, okay? He's talking on behalf of all of us. "We, Lord, are lay people who enjoy worldly pleasure. We lead a life including partners and children. We enjoy worldly pleasure. We use," and he gives examples, "we use sandalwood," from Kashi, from Varanasi. "We deck ourselves with garlands, perfumes, etc. We use gold and silver," yeah, we use money. "To those like us, let the Buddha preach the Dhamma. Let him teach those things to us that lead to well-being and happiness in this life and to well-being and happiness in future life." So I just want to stop here a minute. You know, it's quite a beautiful and important bit here. So this is a lay person, which we, I think, as far as I can see, we all are, yeah, more or less. Yeah, we're not renunciates like the Buddha was. Yeah, we live in the world. Yeah, and so a lay person approaching the Buddha, who was a renunciate, and asking him this question: yeah, how do we live? Yeah, how do we live? You know, we have not renounced enjoyment of sensual pleasure. We have not renounced family. We have not renounced money. Yeah, we have not, renounced perfumes and garlands. Yeah. So what is our possibility? What is our path to happiness and well-being? So first of all, the really important thing here for me, the message is, there is a path. Yeah, you don't need to be renunciate. Yeah, and we'll see, the Buddha responds to the question. He doesn't say, oh, give all of that up. He says, no, this is how you practice. This is what you do. What is our possibility? What is our path to happiness and well-being? And there's this kind of thing here, I don't know if you noticed, well-being and happiness in this life and well-being and happiness in future life. Okay. So sometimes, you know, often traditionally this is translated or explained as reincarnation, you know, in this life and in lives afterwards. But we can also see it, and it's really here in the phrasing, in the present and in the future. Yeah, what can bring well-being and happiness right now, and what can bring well-being and happiness over time? And I leave it to each of you to choose how you want to relate to it, because they can both be true according to your own beliefs, yeah, and understanding. Okay, so we don't need to believe in future lives. Yeah, can say for myself, I'm staying open around that question. Yeah, so we don't need to believe, but we can see that there's things that we do that lead to well-being and happiness in the present, and there's things that we can do that lead to well-being and happiness over time as well. And kind of it opens up the breadth, the spectrum, yeah, of possibilities. Is that a bit clear? Because for me, this is really. Really important point. Yeah, well-being and happiness right now in the present, but also well-being and happiness in the, we can say, in the long term. Yeah, and we can really see it if we use imagery of, you know, of tending seeds, which is often an imagery that we would use in a spiritual path. You know, we do things, we practice, we tend seeds in our being that promote well-being right now, but also promote well-being over time. Yeah, we cultivate habits of heart and mind. Yeah, that as they deepen, as they're nourished, as they're developed and cultivated over time, they bring more and more well-being and happiness in the longer term. So does that make sense? If you nod, and if you write in the chat if it's not clear and you have a question about it, then I'll address that. And so this sutta is quite long. The Buddha's response is quite long, and he actually separates it into two parts. And I'm going to speak about both of them, but more briefly about the first part and more in detail about the second. So he talks about eight different conditions that support this well-being and happiness, but he puts them into two groups. Okay, so this is the first one. Yeah. So four conditions. Yeah, this is the Buddha responding. Four conditions are conducive, are supportive to a householder's, a layperson's well-being and happiness in this very life. Yeah, in the present, right here and now. Yeah, in this moment, or in the immediacy. Doesn't need to be this moment, but this group of moments in the present. Which four? Yeah. The accomplishment of continuous, yeah. The translation here is persistent, and I don't like that word, so I've just retranslated it, okay? So the accomplishment of continuous effort or initiative, yeah. And the accomplishment of vigilance, yeah, and heedfulness. Having in your life good friendship and a balanced livelihood. You know, just touch lightly on each of this, yeah, on each of these. I'm not going to stay with them too long because I want to go to the second grouping more, but a little bit on each of them. So that first one, continuous effort or initiative. And the Buddha, in the sutta, he particularly talks about this in relationship to how we are in the world, yeah, of having initiative in the sense of having aliveness, yeah. Keeping ourselves going in our engagement, yeah, with life, with the world, yeah, with how he particularly speaks about the aspects of the householder's life, yeah, earning a living, taking care of family. Yeah, we have to also put this in the context of the historical time. Yeah, almost everyone had a family; that was part of the deal. Yeah, yeah, and so. You know, that kind of effort or initiative, which is about just keeping showing up and bringing energy, yeah, not getting too automated and dull in the way we engage with what makes up our lives. Then the second one is vigilance, or what sometimes described as watchfulness, or heedfulness. Yeah, being aware of how we impact others, yeah. Being aware of how we impact others. The third, yeah, good friendship, yeah, in Pali, Kalyanamitta, yeah, very core principle. Yeah, the Buddha said many times how important this is. Yeah, in one sutta, he talks about this being the whole of the spiritual life, associating with others, yeah, in ways that bring out the best in us, yeah. And the best in those around us. Yeah, this is good friendship. Those that really kind of connect us, yeah, to our aspirations, support us, yeah, to live in tune with those aspirations. Yeah, good friendship. And balanced livelihood, a livelihood that does not cause harm. Yeah, and if you're familiar with some of the teachings, you might recognize some of, you know, for example, the Eightfold Path here. Yeah, livelihood, wise livelihood is one of the of the path factors that lead to awakening, that lead us away from suffering. Yeah, interesting, huh? How many times have you heard Dharma talks about that? Yeah, wise livelihood. The way we live, the choices we make, how we earn our living, all of that needs to be in accord with non-harming. Yeah? All of that needs to be in accord with compassion and wisdom. So a livelihood that does not or minimizes harm to others. So those are the four, and as I said, I'm not gonna spend too much time with those. If you have questions, there'll be time for questions at the end. I want to kind of look at the other four, the other group, which is sometimes this grouping is called conditions of spiritual progress. Yeah, and so these are the four that support well-being and happiness in the future. Yeah, as well as the present. Yeah, over time. Yeah, looking ahead at what qualities we develop, what we nourish, what we cultivate. So four conditions are conducive to a householder's well-being and happiness in his future life. Which four? The accomplishment of faith or conviction, in Pali Sada. The accomplishment of virtue, morality, ethics, in Pali Sila. The accomplishment of dana, of giving, Here the Buddha uses a different word, saga, which is often translated as charity, sharing with others. And the accomplishment of wisdom or discernment, panya. So again, if you're familiar with the Eightfold Path, you recognize, again, quite a few of the factors from there. But let's go into them, and we'll spend a little bit more time here, I hope. So what is the accomplishment of faith or conviction? Yeah, these are two different translations of the word sadha. Here a householder is possessed of conviction. They believe in the awakening of the Buddha. They can see that the Buddha is fully enlightened, fully awake, endowed with knowledge and conduct. Really important, endowed with knowledge and conduct. The knower of worlds, the incomparable leader of men and women to be tamed, the teachers of gods and humans, all knowing and blessed. This is called the accomplishment of faith or conviction. So let's see what we can make of this. Let's see, and really important, like, what do we hear when we listen to this? Yeah, sometimes it can sound, and for some of us it can feel, like almost like a religious faith. Yeah, this is the one who is awake. I would, this is my own way of seeing it, and one of the ways that the tradition encourages us to see it. Sada in the possibility of awakening. So what does the Buddha represent? Yeah. Buddha means awakened one. That's literally the meaning of the word. Yeah. Awakened one. What does that represent? Yeah. The possibility of waking up. Conviction. Yeah. In that possibility. Faith. In that possibility. Confidence. In that possibility. Yeah. This path leads somewhere, in other words, that's the conviction, that's the faith. This path leads somewhere. The Buddha did it. He or she were a human being. Yeah, we can't take the fact that he's described as a he in the texts to mean much, comes from a very patriarchal society, so we can say he or she. Did it. Therefore, it's possible for me. This is the most important part here. Yeah. The Buddha awoke. This path leads somewhere. Therefore, it's possible for me. I can do it. This can be done. Yeah. This can be done. And you know, this quality of sadha, faith, conviction, confidence, such a foundation and support in our practice. You know, like, just check for yourself, either right now, reflect on your practice, or try it next time you're meditating. Yeah. What happens when that is there? You know, just that sense of this can be done. Yeah. There's so much that comes in is doubt, yeah, fear, lack of conviction, lack of confidence. Yeah. And that has an unsettling effect for us. You know, it just is there, unsettles us. What happens when we can bring in this, yeah, invite in this quality? Yeah, and you know, we can, if it's helpful, we can remember the Buddha, we can remember anyone else that inspires us. Yeah, Buddha just symbolizes this possibility. So it might be anyone else that inspires us. They can have nothing to do with Buddhism at all. But someone that inspires us in how they live or lived, yeah, in what they embodied in their humanity. Remember, using that to remember, this can be done. Or sometimes I can do it, yeah. We're allowed to use the self here, if it's supportive. I can do it. Mm-hmm. I was reflecting on this, you know, of using this in my own practice, and sometimes, you know, it's like using those phrases, yeah, really using those phrases at times of doubts, times when I'm stuck, yeah, times when things are challenging, yeah. On retreat or in life with a multiple hindrance attack. You know, all the hindrances showering me, yeah, with a lot of generosity. Yeah, the doubt, the restlessness, the tiredness. Yes, they can arise at the same time sometimes. Pay attention and you'll see in your experience you can be restless and drowsy together. Yeah. Desire and aversion, yeah, all of them. Yeah. And in that sense, no, I can do this. This can be done. And sometimes with more energy, you know, I can do this. You know, like really, like if we need the energy, we can use that in how we say the phrase. And sometimes more softly, more gently, I can do this. This can be done. Yeah. And in the tradition, of course, you know, the Buddha is one of three refuges exactly for this purpose. Yeah, that reminder, not the Buddha as some, you know, some godlike figure necessarily. Again, feel free to use the Buddha image in that way if that's helpful for you. But as a symbol of what's possible for us, yeah. Of wakefulness and awakening. Yeah. So that, yeah, that refuge, that place of grounding and support in the possibility of waking up. Possibility of freedom. Yeah, that's the first refuge. The other two are the Dharma, yeah, the teaching of the path. Yeah. So here's where we're going, that's possible for us, and here's the practice, here's how to get there. And that's a refuge. And the third is the Sangha, the community. So it goes back to that Kalyanamitta, remember, in the first grouping, the good friendship. So Sada. What was the name of the grounded support? I can do this aspect. In Pali, sadha, like conviction, S-A-D-D-H-A. I'll just put it in. Oops. Yeah. Oops, the autocorrect wants to change it to saddle. Sounds the same, but not quite. And literally, usually translated as faith, conviction, or confidence. Okay. So that was the first of this group of four. The second is virtue, ethics, morality, in Pali, sila. Yeah, what is the accomplishment of sila? Here a householder abstains, yeah, does not do, yeah, abstains from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, and from intoxicants that cloud the mind. This is called the accomplishment of sila, a virtue of ethics. Yeah. So, you know, this part is talking about bringing consciousness, bringing awareness into our actions and into their impact. Yeah. Our actions have impact in the world. So we bring consciousness, we bring awareness to that. Yeah. And we also bring intention. Yeah. So if you look at this, sila, virtue, ethics, abstaining from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, and from intoxicants that cloud the mind. Yeah. So this is all about non-harming. Yeah. Non-harming. And that vigilance, again, in the first section, yeah, there was vigilance or watchfulness. Yeah. So that vigilance about the results of our actions and their alignment with our aspirations and intentions. So having that vigilance, bringing in that intention, you know, being aware what causes harm to self or other, yeah, and how can I prioritize not harming. Yeah. And that really beautiful thing with sila, that when we really prioritize not harming others, we're also taking care of ourselves. Yeah. We create a space of safety for others. We create a world of safety for others. But we're also taking care of ourselves, because when we act in ways that cause harm, we too suffer. Yeah. We too suffer. So the third aspect, what is the accomplishment of charity? I love this one. A householder dwells with a heart free from avarice, a heart free of hoarding and keeping things for oneself. Yeah. Devoted to charity, open-handed, delighting in generosity. To see the language here, it's just full of joy and happiness. Delighting in generosity, attending to those who are needy, delighting in the distribution of alms. This is called the accomplishment of charity. So I love this kind of movement from not causing harm with sila, yeah, that real emphasis of non-harming. And here this takes us into actually doing good, yeah, not just abstaining from that which harms, but really emphasizing acting in ways that nourish and support. And the language here is such a strong description of happiness. Yeah? A heart free from the stain of avarice. Yeah? Devoted to charity. Delighting in generosity. Yeah, just look at the language. So this movement that we can also feel from contraction. Yeah, you think of avarice. Yeah. Contraction, keeping for myself, not wanting others to have, yeah, from contraction to expansion, yeah. And that's the movement, of course, that we are practicing towards in practice and Dharma practice. And we can see the mutuality and the support there. Movement from contraction to expansion. And so one game that I like to do, I can't remember who I learnt this from. It's not an original. I didn't invent this. Just want to say that, don't want to take credit, is to take the precepts of sila that we touched on just now and to reframe them in this way, yeah, the active component, we can say, not just the non-harming, but the actual actively supporting the good. So if we look at not killing, yeah, the active positive aspects of that would be supporting and affirming life, yeah. Not just not killing and not harming life, but actually supporting life, caring for life. Yeah. And, you know, with kind of our awareness of the planet nowadays, yeah, that really takes on a whole new thing. Yeah. So we don't just stop deforestation, we also reforest, for example. Yeah. We don't just, take care that the seeds of kind of the harmful in our hearts are not nurtured, don't grow stronger. We actually nourish the seeds of the care and the compassion and the wisdom. So from killing to life supporting and affirming, from not stealing, not taking what isn't ours, to generosity and sharing and giving, from not lying to using speech in compassionate ways, yeah, using speech in nourishing ways, from not kind of having sexual misconduct, not using sexual energy in harmful ways, to using sexual energy in ways that promote love, promote respect. Yeah, so we have all this movement. And then from not using intoxicants that cloud the mind, yeah, to doing everything we can to nourish the body, heart and mind towards clarity and towards wisdom. So kind of we can see this kind of movement, not from just, you know, the non-harming, which in itself is, you know, enough, right? But seeing this other side of it, yeah, the positive aspect, not just what we refrain from, but what we engage with. And so right there at the end, yeah, nourishing body, heart and mind in ways that develop clarity and wisdom connects us to the fourth accomplishment that the Buddha's talking about, which is the accomplishment of wisdom or discernment. Here, a householder is wise. They're endowed with wisdom that understands the arising and cessation, the arising, the coming together, and the disappearance of all conditions of existence. They are possessed of noble, penetrating insight that frees, that leads to the end of suffering for self and others. Yeah. This is called the accomplishment of wisdom. Just a tiny little accomplishment there. Nothing big, you know. Maybe we want to hang on to the belief in reincarnation right now and future lives to get us there, to give us enough time. Yeah. But so beautiful. That wisdom that understands the coming together, yeah, the rising, and the passing away, yeah, of all conditioned things. Being possessed of noble, penetrating insight that leads to destruction of suffering for ourselves and others. So, you know, in short, that which liberates, that which frees, yeah, on every level. Seeing the dependent, codependent nature, dependently originating nature of all phenomena, including each of us, including everything that you're perceiving right now. It's really the deep end of the deep here. Yeah. The deep end of the deep. And it liberates. Why? Why does it liberate? It liberates because it reduces the craving and the clinging that build up dukkha and therefore transforms dukkha, transforms suffering. And it dissolves our ignorance, yeah, transforming it into wisdom. Yeah. From that misperception of an independent, permanent and separate self, yeah, or independent, permanent phenomena, to seeing that movement conditioned, yeah, dependently originating, empty. Yeah. And all the possibilities that come from that. So these are the four conditions, says the Buddha, conducive to a householder's well-being and happiness. Yeah. In this life and in future life. Yeah. So here and now and over time. These are the four conditions. And they go from sadha, from conviction, from faith, from confidence in the possibility to awake, all the way to awakening itself. Yeah. So the wisdom and discernment the Buddha is talking about here, he's talking about that wisdom that frees, yeah, that noble, penetrating insight, in his words, that frees us. So I think this is what I wanted to say today. I'll say that I used two translations in what I was reading. As you can tell, I'm never quite satisfied with one translation, so I combine them. One by Narada and one by Tanisara Bhikkhu. So there's two different translations of this sutta, and I'll just put the name of the sutta here in case anyone's interested to have a look at it. And then we'll have time for questions or comments if anything arises. That's the name of the sutta, and I'll put the number as well.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.